702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
Coming up on the show today, we'll wrap up 702's Town Hall with Clement in Katlehong. Jacob Zuma loses his bid to privately prosecute Billy Downer and Karen Morn. Inflation eases to 5.3%. An investigation into yet another school trip drowning. And the latest from the Senzo Miyiwa trial. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. Good to be with you today. For our 702 listeners, if you have been with us for the past 3 hours, you would have been glued, no doubt, to that town hall with Clement Manyatela in Katlehong. We're going to wrap up the morning with him shortly and speak to Tiri Madia as well. But what some of the key issues were coming out, you would have heard in the EWN bulletin there. Service delivery, of course, is a very big thing in Katlehong. And just the situation politically in Ekurhuleni. So we'll wrap all of that up for you. For our Cape Town listeners, we will wrap up that town hall for you as well, because you wouldn't have necessarily heard it. So we'll give you a sense of what was discussed there. The big breaking news story this morning, former President Jacob Zuma's bid to privately prosecute the prosecutor, Billy Downer, and the journalist, News 24 journalist Karen Morn, being struck off the roll in the Pietermaritzburg High Court. And this has been dragging on for years. We know that Zuma instituted a private prosecution against Downer and Morn in 2022. And he alleged that public court documents regarding his corruption case were leaked to Morn, including a sick note from the former president's doctors. But now several courts have found that this is just not the case. So we will speak to Karen Morn about that. But firstly, let's go to Katlehong and speak to Clement Manyatela, who has had his hands full for the past 3 hours, as you would have heard. Clement, good afternoon to you. Sure, I'm sure you're wiping your brow and taking a breather after that. Clement, are you with us?
Indeed, Mandy.
There we go. Are you able to hear me? Loud and clear.
Apologies.
So, no problem. I mean, tell me how it went.
We wrapped up our broadcast on really when tensions were really high, so which is why things are still a little bit sketchy. But yeah, the last 3 hours have just been incredible here in Katlehong. Incredible in that we really got the genuine reflections from the residents of Katlehong about their concerns, what they think this government has failed to do, what they think this government has managed to do. And you do get a sense that this, in a way, is a metro that for some reason has, I don't want to say forgotten, but it's been failed by politicians who have decided to put their interests first. So political expediency first before service delivery, which is why we've seen the level of instability, because politicians are getting into these coalition agreements not because they're going to work for the people of Ekurhuleni, but because it's a give and take. It's a quid pro quo. And I think that's what we got from the residents. And from the politicians themselves, the usual promises, Mandy, of this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to fix. And you've got politicians who come and as if they were not part of the last administration, and they say, we are cleaning up. But what are you cleaning up? You were there when things were breaking down. And I think that's the sense that we got from the politicians. They're talking about their plans to rebuild Ekurhuleni and particularly Katlehong, but they've made similar promises before in the past.
You mentioned the fact that that last little bit I was listening was very, very tense, emotions running high. For those people who may have missed it, our Cape Talk listeners, for example, wouldn't have heard it. What was the contentious issue there between the politicians?
So Ayanda Ali Payne spoke, Mandy, and I think that's really what really got the tension so high. Because Ayanda Ali Payne spoke about the ANC that, yes, has taken you one step forward, but the ANC has come back to take this country 100 steps backward. And after she made that comment, there were some ANC supporters who were sitting in the crowd who got up and went towards her. I mean, there are some politicians who were on this couch with me who felt, why was this person invited? What is BOSA? And I had to make it very clear that a 702 we speak to people that are legitimate in the context of elections that are going to be covering, that are going to be contesting elections. And BOSA is one of those parties that are registered. They've met the deadline. They are going to be on the ballot. And these elections are not about the ANC and the EFF and the DA and all the big parties that have already been existing. These elections are also about small parties. And when we do these town halls, these big parties must not come with big party personalities thinking that they get the space, right? We give them the space, but they must know that they're competing against other smaller parties or newer parties that are entering the fray. And they too deserve a voice.
This is the second town hall that we've done. We were in Garankuwa a couple of weeks ago in the build-up to the election, Clement. When you reflect on the past 3 hours and doing these kinds of town halls, what is the sense that you get in terms of how residents are feeling, what some of the key election issues are, and how it contributes to the discourse?
Here's what I've always thought about local government elections versus national elections, Mandy. We're always told when there's local government elections that people care about the bread and butter issues. And then when it's national elections, we're often told, oh, it's about policy issues. I think that's false. In the last elections town hall we did in Garankuwa, similarly here in Katlehong as well, people are not even mentioning the big policy issues. I didn't even hear a single person today talk about the big policy issues. What people are concerned about are service delivery issues. They are bread and butter issues. Yes, these are provincial and national elections, but make no mistake how they wake up in the morning, how they interface with the police officers, how they wake up and open their taps, whether there's water or not, how they wake up and they see there's no functioning proper public infrastructure. Those are the issues that influence how they vote, even in the provincial and national elections. And I think that's what I'm getting over and over again as we bring politicians to come and interact with the residents, is that they care about issues that affect them on a daily, not the big policy issues that are dealt with at national government. And that's really been the realization for me over the last two town hall meetings.
Well, Clement, thank you very much for that. I think you go and put your feet up and deserve a break after that very intense 3 hours. Thanks for wrapping it all up for us. I know Tidi Madia, EWN's Associate Politics Editor, is sitting next to you. So, Tidi, I'm going to jump over to you because you have also had your hands full with that roving microphone today. But I think for a broader sense of where we are in Ekurhuleni, and the fact that there is a new mayor who was there today, and the general upheaval in Ekurhuleni, which is filtering down onto the ground. How do you reflect on the past 3 hours and what people had to say?
You know, Mandy, there was a desperation, a yearning to see who the new mayor is. So people are desperate to connect with their leaders. And I think they're well aware of the constant disruptions that have happened in council and the impact thereof on themselves and their environment. I think Clement earlier said to you, Ekurhuleni often feels like a forgotten region. They feel that way in Katlehong. They speak about the Natal Spirit Hospital. I think you might remember it. That was here, sure, that yeah. was destroyed because it's dolmatic land and was moved to forced on us, and they said, but nobody ever thought about the economy that had developed around this particular hospital and the adverse impact on Katlehong in losing a hospital like Natal Spirit. Nobody thought about the consequences on the elderly in trying to find help. And those are things that, again, are being promised by politicians, yet you know that these won't be delivered. I mean, some of the people we spoke to, Mandy, spoke about promises from 1994, living in an informal settlement, saying that a mayor will come on the eve of elections, saying, please do this, we will formalize your township, we'll electrify. Mm. And today, 30 years later, they're still begging to be seen.
One of the problems that I heard arising in a lot of those accusations and claims over the past 3 hours was when you have multiple mayors and administrations, it's easy to point fingers and not take responsibility. So the current mayor blames the previous administration, and that administration will blame the administration before them. Do you get the sense, listening to the residents there, that there is no accountability?
Absolutely, Mandy. I think that's been my biggest problem is when things go right, everybody claims the victory, right? Everybody sees their role in how they managed to achieve something. But in a place like this where so much has been going wrong for so long, what you often find is a blame game. You saw that playing itself off here. I think it's also very important to speak about tolerance because some of these parties are in council. Yes, a bossa might not be there yet, but these parties that are supposedly meant to work with each other, almost every response that was given to questions by either Clement or by the residents really is political. So you forget, you speak about how you must rise above party affiliation and how actually they must work together. But in everything, people withdraw automatically to a party line and to take a defensive posture about what they stand for, what their party has done and not done. The struggle to concede, Mandy, to wrongdoing on the part of MEC Jacob Mamabolo, on the part of the mayor, where their parties have been responsible for things that have gone wrong. The difficulty in going, actually, we erred here, then, there, is really quite telling. It's one thing to say, yes, things have gone wrong, but to actually go narrow it down to what you've done wrong and to own that is still a very difficult thing for these politicians.
Tidi, thank you very much. That's Tidi Madia, EWN's Associate Politics Editor in Katlehong. So thank you to the entire team that was out there. If you were listening, our Joburg listeners on 702, if you were listening, you would have heard over the past 3 hours. For our Cape Town listeners, that's a wrap of what happened over the past 3 hours. Tidi mentioned the comments made by the new Kurileni Mayor, Dr. Kakaza, and also the MEC of Finance, Jacob Mamabolo. I'm going to play you two clips just so that you can get a taste of what happened earlier. So let's firstly listen to the new Ekurhuleni Mayor, Dr. Kakaza, speaking to Clement about service delivery delays due to coalitions.
And thank you very much for the opportunity, MEC. Greetings to you, and thank you very much for the well wishes. I must say that our focus at this stage is on stabilizing council because we have been successfully elected as a mayor of Ekurhuleni unopposed. We take courage in that decision by council, and we think we want to build from there to build stability and ensure that we consolidate a program that will ensure that there's sustainable and impactful service delivery to our people. And I think I just felt that maybe I must make that commitment, maybe as a starting point, that the areas of water, of energy, of waste, potholes will be the critical areas that we have to look at. We know the situation, even here in Katlehong, as you enter, there's a Tekema project that we need to actually ensure that we fast track so that the sewer challenges are actually resolved.
That's the Ekurhuleni Mayor, Dr. Kakaza, speaking there. And then let's have a listen to the MEC of Finance, Jacob Mamabolo, and what he had to say.
I think the issues that, let me start with acknowledging the point that is made on, you know, the need for the crime prevention wardens. I guess the principle is for them to do even more to make sure that they improve performance on fighting crime and of course making sure that the people feel safe. I think that point we will raise it. The call is making that they need to do more. This we will take up with community safety. So the point is acknowledged.
Jacob Mamabolo, the MEC, speaking about crime in Katlehong. So if you missed it earlier, you can go and listen to the podcast on Prime Media Plus. It was also live streamed on YouTube, so you can go and watch it as well and catch up with that town hall in Katlehong.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
To the big breaking news story today, former President Jacob Zuma's bid to privately prosecute the state advocate Billy Downer and journalist Karen Morn being struck off the roll by the Pietermaritzburg High Court today. Karen Morn's lawyer arguing last week that the court should strike the matter due to several failed appeals by Zuma in this case. We know that Zuma did institute this private prosecution 2 years ago now. He alleged that public court documents regarding his corruption case were leaked to Morn including a sick note from his doctors. And we have seen this winding through the court, several different courts making this finding. So is this now the final decision? We're joined now by Karen Morn, legal journalist at News 24. Karen, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. Firstly, before we get into what this means, what was the decision made by the court today?
Well, effectively, what the court said was that the matter would be removed from the roll, but this in no way prejudiced the former president's rights to reinstate the prosecution. And he directed that both myself and Advocate Dana, in the event that the former president succeeded in his appeals, would make ourselves available for the continuation of that private prosecution, which has now been invalidated by multiple courts. And obviously, we got the enforcement order enforcing that invalidation. So the court was at pains to say that this was in no way, should the former president succeed in his appeal, we would then be required. But as an entity, a legal entity in and of itself, the private prosecution has now been struck.
So the private prosecution has been struck. Several courts have made a finding on this. Is this the end of the road now, or are there other legal avenues that he is likely to pursue?
My understanding is that the SCA dismissed on the papers the former president's attempt to appeal against the invalidation. He then sought a reconsideration of that decision by that court's president. That reconsideration was refused. He is now, as I understand it, going to seek to challenge the reconsideration of refusal in the Constitutional Court. He could then, if that is refused, mount a sort of straight appeal to the Constitutional Court. And he may, in the event that that gets refused, then obviously seek a rescission, which he has done in other cases. So, you know, there are other legal options available to him. But while those options are being exercised, neither myself, Dana, or our lawyers will be required to keep appearing in court on that private prosecution, which I think we will view as a victory at this point.
Karen, if I can ask you to just take your journalist hat off for a second, if possible. Of course, you are the subject of this court case. Former President Jacob Zuma is as well. This has been going on for 2 years now. There have been persistent appeals by the former president. How do you feel on a personal level today now that this matter has been struck?
I don't know. It's just so much relief. I mean, you and I have known each other for many years. We're very aware of the kind of pressures of this job and the way in which it can really get to you. And I think that I'm just very grateful that I work with a company that put so much time, money and effort and really exceptional lawyers into fighting this. And the incredible thing is that this judgment, that what was handed down, has been used to protect other journalists in the Motti case, in the Alex Mafia case. And, you know, I think that in that respect, it was worth it. But in many other respects, I think it'll take time to process what all happened and to just fully come to terms with it on a personal and emotional level. Yeah.
I appreciate you being candid on this. I'm sure it's very difficult for you. And as you said, it is, of course, the inherent pressures of the job. But what we've seen from former President Jacob Zuma is, through his Stalingrad approach to the court, a continuous, many would argue, abuse of the court process, although he is exercising every potential democratic right. What is the cost of this?
Well, I mean, you know, there's obviously going to be, there's been litigation instituted by the state attorney to get back about, I think it's about 32 million rand in taxpayer, costs, you know, that were spent by taxpayers on his attempt to defend himself against those corruption charges. But I think in relation to myself and Advocate Dana, you and I, you know, he's a very respected state advocate. You know, having to sit in a dock with someone who'd given his life to the NPA, I think, was one of the hardest things I've ever experienced. And, you know, the reality is, Mandy, that, you know, the people that don't want to believe the facts around this case will continue to accuse me of stealing medical records, will continue to call me, you know, a racist propagandist hell-bent on Zuma's demise, even though that has been found to be fundamentally untrue. But in the end of the day, truth is a very persistent thing, and we don't have to, you know, it's a line. You don't need to defend it. Let it loose, it'll defend itself. And people who really do care about this country, really care about the truth, really care about justice, they know what happened. They know what the truth is. And I just have to hold on to that and keep doing my job just like you do. Keep going, because this country is worth it. This democracy is worth it. And, you know, we'll keep going, you know.
Karen, thank you very much. Thanks for speaking to us today. Karen Morn, legal journalist at News 24, reacting there to that decision by the court to strike former President Jacob Zuma's bid to privately prosecute her and state advocate Billy Downer.
702, The Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
A little glimmer of good news. Consumer prices easing slightly. Inflation cooling a little bit to 5.3% in March, down from 5.6% in February. Let's unpack this very quickly with Hugo Pinar, who's the chief economist at the Minerals Council of South Africa. Hugo, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. The inflation rate was higher than some analysts' expectations, but still broadly in line with expectations that inflation would gradually edge closer to the 4.5% midpoint. What were your expectations, and how did this data come in?
Well, good afternoon, Mandy, and to your listeners. Well, in fact, the Bloomberg consensus and also our own forecast was for 5.4% year-on-year in March. So at 5.3, as you mentioned, the number came in slightly better or lower than the general expectation was. Now, indeed, 5.3% is still quite a bit above where the Reserve Bank wants inflation to be settling at 4.5%. But yes, if one thinks back in July 2022, headline CPI inflation peaked at 7.8% year-on-year, we have indeed made quite a bit of progress, although it has been a bit sticky around this sort of 5.4-5.5% range in the last 6 months or so.
So is this the bottoming out that we're going to see that people are expecting, or what, how do you expect it to play out over the next few months?
Well, Mandy, I mean, we have a couple of risk factors. The one is that the Brent crude oil price is now sitting around $90 per barrel. It was closer to $80 per barrel at the start of the year. And this is, of course, the function of all of the tensions in the Middle East. But importantly, this suggests that we're probably going to see another petrol price increase in the beginning of May. So that will add some pressure on the inflation numbers. And then on the food price side, we're seeing white maize prices in South Africa shoot up quite dramatically because of concerns about lower maize crops. So that feeds into food prices going forward. So I think, you know, we're probably going to hover around these sort of levels, let's say roughly around 5.5%, we think, for the next 3-4 months. So we think it's only later this year, going into 2025, when inflation starts to move below this 5% mark and closer to where the Reserve Bank wants it to be.
Hugo, thank you so much for that. Hugo Pinar speaking to us there, the chief economist at the Minerals Council of South Africa, reflecting on those numbers released by Stats SA, inflation cooling slightly to 5.3%.
WhatsApp Mandy
on 072-702-1702.
A good day, Mandy. The mayor of Ekurhuleni said that we were elected as mayor in the chamber. How many mayors does Ekurhuleni have? Or the mayor was trying to say that he won't make a decision alone, but you're going to make a decision with those people who supported his mayorship. I don't know. Thanks, David.
Hey, David, thank you very much. Look, I think this is one of the issues that we're talking about in terms of having multiple administrations and whether or not anyone can make a decision. On the WhatsApp line, JD says, Mandy, nothing is going to change in Ekurhuleni as long as the EFF is still there. ANC must stop playing with people of Ekurhuleni and say they were elected. They just made a deal with the EFF. Expect nothing there. So lots of reaction along those lines about this so-called doomsday deal, as John Steenhuisen puts it, between the ANC and the EFF in Ekurhuleni, and the fact that if we don't have the political maturity required for coalitions, then they will fall apart. But at the same time, it makes it easy for various administrations to just point the finger at one another and say, well, you didn't do it. We promise we'll do it, but we probably won't.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Yet another drowning at a school trip in Gauteng. So the Gauteng Education Department officials today visiting the Davyton Skills School in Benoni after two of its pupils drowned. And this was during a camp, a discipline camp is how it's described, near the Hennops River in Centurion. Two pupils drowning during this trip, and now an investigation is underway. The Gauteng Education Department officials trying to find out what happened. Mongezi Koko, EWN reporters, on the story for us. Mongezi, good afternoon to you. What do we know about what happened in this incident?
Afternoon, Mandy. Well, there were quite a number of shocking revelations today. The most important one that I think we should touch on is MEC Madumichul 1A saying that the department, district and some teachers were not aware of the excursion. Now, what you need to note is that there were 90 pupils who partook in this excursion, and there was only one social worker who was in charge of taking care of these children. Now, of course, when they arrived, they were met by, well, a camping site that didn't even have lifeguards on site to ensure that the children who are partaking in water activities are well guarded. And in further explaining some of these issues and challenges, Madumichulwane then touched on the ages of these learners, confirming that they're now 14 and 17 years. And, of course, they come from a special skills school which serves special needs, educational needs for students. So Matume did highlight that this was, of course, an error by the teachers, and action will be taken. He says that the action is going to be taken immediately with some teachers. Well, they're going to be suspended starting from today. He then went on to let us know, Mandy, that another independent law firm will be hired and their services will be used to get to the bottom of this. And this is similar to what happened in January. In 2024, in January, we saw Latoya Tamilton drowning at another excursion. And of course, an independent law firm was brought in. Now, when I asked Madumichulwane about the constant hiring of services of independent law firms and not really using their outlines and guidelines and making them applicable to each and every school, what then is the next step? How are we going to take this forward? He didn't really provide me with an answer. He just said that they're going to have to wait for the results that come from, or rather the findings that come from this particular investigation by this law firm.
So, Mongezi, just a point of clarity to take you back to what you said at the start. Was this a school-endorsed trip, or was it just one social worker that went rogue and organized this outing?
And now this is what we're going to find out. This is what the independent law firm is going to be probing. Because what we do understand is that they weren't even consent papers. So they didn't really give out letters pertaining to the particular excursion. And now it's questioned, how can 90 students go on this particular trip if the teachers say that we didn't okay the trip, but the 90 children went nearly, this is 60 kilometers away from the school. How is it possible? So those questions will be answered by the independent law firm. And I want to add this, Mandy. Madume did make it clear that we're going to get to the bottom of this quicker than we did with Latoya, because if you remember, the Latoya investigation took around about 6 weeks. So this particular one will be quicker, he says, because we know that it was two students and we understand what exactly happened. Now we just need to know who's responsible.
Mongezi Koko, EWN reporter, thank you very much for that. Just astonishing that this keeps on happening. I did see my colleague, Nele Mdoda, saying on the Twitter, the X, that, you know, if these things keep happening, then surely it's time to cancel swimming on school outings. They happen repeatedly, these kinds of incidents. Clearly, they're not the right measures in place. Let's just stop swimming on school outings if we are going to see children drowning like this and schools are not being sufficiently responsible. What are your thoughts on that? Send me a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567.
Drownings on school trips. Why in heaven's name do they not just stay away from the rivers? Do not get into the rivers anyway. The Hennops River is a polluted mess. I have no idea what this obsession is with rivers and with the risks that children have to take by getting into the river. And they would feel the peer pressure to do so, even if they can't swim. Leonard in Hermanus.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
12:43 on the Midday Report. Let's get into some of the court cases that we are watching for you today. In addition, of course, to that big breaking news story of that private prosecution of Karen Moore and Billy Downer being struck off the roll. In fact, lots of reaction to that interview with Karen Moore, in which she was very candid about the emotional costs and the pressure and what she's been through this private prosecution. If you missed it, it's definitely worth going to listen to the podcast. Let's get the latest now on the Senzo Meiwa trial, because we know that there have been a lot of delays there. It is moving again this morning. There had been a three-week adjournment, and it started moving yesterday, in fact. Khomotso Modise, EWN reporter there for us. Khomotso, good afternoon to you. Take us through what's happening in court today.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, we've got Lieutenant Colonel Gideon Goetz, who's a forensic police officer, and he analyzes cell phones. And she's a police officer that did a part of the analysis of cell phones that have been attributed to the second accused, Bongani Ndandi, as well as the fifth accused, Sibongiseni Dhudi. On Monday, when the state started with this chain of evidence, they started with presenting to the court how these phones were found. And we heard on Monday how Bongani Ndandi was found by police, allegedly with his phone at the Valeria police station where he was being held. And we also heard how Sibongiseni Dhudi was also found with a cell phone in his cell at the Kalagabusha prison where he was being held. Now, Ndandi has denied being found with a phone at the Valeria police station. He says both the cell phones that he had were taken upon his arrest in June 2020 on the 16th. And Ndudi has also denied his phone being taken, saying there was a phone that was taken from the cell that he was in, but this was a phone that was found near his cellmate. Now, today, the evidence that's been led today in court and the testimony has revealed a number of things about these phones. The first thing is that the phone that has been linked to Bongani Ndandi, there's been content found on there to show that there was activity on this phone during the time that he was at the Valeria police station. We've been shown screenshots. We've been shown pic mixes where he combined his photo with a photo of someone we understand to be his girlfriend. This was during the time while he was held at the Valeria police station. We've even seen how he downloaded pictures of guns from Facebook during the time that he was at the Valeria police station. Now, something that's been revealed also is that phone was used to be in contact with some of his co-accused. But we do not know when exactly that contact was made. Just the fact that it was used, the fifth accused did get in touch with him through that phone. And we also know that he had the numbers of some of the accused saved on that phone. And then with regards to the fifth accused, Mandy, what we've learned is that while the fifth accused basically distanced himself from that phone, we've seen two important cell phone numbers that have been saved on that phone. The first belonging to Mapisa, who is his co-accused, and the second, the name Shololo, who we know is his legal representative, his lawyer, was also saved on that phone. For now, however, the internal host has been given a bit of a break as the state finds another extra before proceedings continue at 2 p.m.
Khomotso, thank you very much for that. Khomotso Modise, EWN reporter with the latest on the Senzo Meiwa trial. The subject there today is cell phone analysis. We were supposed to hear from a ballistics expert earlier this week. That's now been postponed to next month. But we're now starting to see this trial moving and actual forensic evidence being presented to the court.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
12:49 on the Midday Report. Lots of response to the comments I made about swimming on school camps following that incident in which two children drowned at the weekend. Tracy saying, shame, swimming is a life skill. Drowning will keep happening if schools don't implement skills at grassroots level. Our kids shouldn't be punished. My argument, and some other people have argued as well, is that we should stop swimming on school trips if people keep drowning and schools clearly are not able to take that responsibility. Is the counter argument then actually we should just be teaching more people to swim, and it is a life skill. So Do we have better programs in place? Is there more that we can do at a primary school level to teach swimming to children? Is it practical, considering the environment? What are your thoughts on that? Continue to send me WhatsApp voice notes, 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567. Let's go back to the courts now, because the alleged underworld boss, Nafiz Modak, is on trial in the Western Cape High Court. He's facing a whole range of charges, including that charges related to the murder of Detective Charl Kinnear, who was shot and killed outside his Bishop Lavis home in 2020. Carlo Peterson, EWN reporter, following this case for us. Carlo, good afternoon to you. What's been happening in court today?
Good afternoon, Mandy. So the trial against Modak is continuing in the Western Cape High Court today, with a cross-examination of a state witness, a self-confessed hitman known only as Mr. A. And in today's proceedings, it's centered around the alleged bounty on defense attorney William Boothseed, which is said to be 3 million rand, according to Mr. A. What Mr. A has told the court so far is that Modak allegedly hired him via one of the other accused in the case to murder Nicholas Heerskap, a former Hawks officer. That murder was botched by Mr. A. in Malkbosstrand in 2019, when in a case of apparent mistaken identity, he murdered Yerskap's father, Nico, instead. Mr. A. also told the court he was informed by the same co-accused that Modak had put the 3 million rand price on Boothseed. Now, defense attorney for Modak, Mohammed Sibda, told Mr. A he found this strange because Mr. A had previously told the court that Modak, via that same co-accused, told Mr. A he was unable to pay him 60,000 rand for the murder of Heerskap. Mr. A told the court that following the Heerskap murder, despite not being paid the full amount for that hit, Modak also gave him a luxury car and a licensed firearm, which led him to believe the 3 million rand would be paid. Sibda then continued to argue that Mr. A's version is highly improbable because Modak would not have offered such a vast sum for the life of Booth, in contrast to the 60,000 rand for Heerskap. Right now, the court is currently adjourned, Mandy, and the cross-examination is set to continue later today.
Carlo, thank you very much for that. Carlo Peterson, EWN reporter, wrapping up what's happening today in that trial against Nafiz Modak.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
And still in the court, the Nelspruit Specialized Commercial Crimes Court in Mbombela, in Mpumalanga, is today expected to deliver judgment in the corruption case of the former State Security Minister Bongani Bongo and 16 co-accused. The accused, including Bongo, want their case struck off the roll, saying that there's no evidence of corruption. Remember, this is all to do with land deals to the value of 70 million rand. There were some reports that Bongo hadn't appeared in court and that there was a warrant for his arrest. The NPA then dispelled that. But let's just get clarity with Mweli Masilela, Newsroom Africa reporter, who's there for us. Mweli, thank you very much for making time to speak to us. Welcome to the Midday Report. Firstly, just some clarity on those reports that there was an arrest warrant for Bongani Bongo. What is the NPA saying about that?
No, I think the confusion emanates from the fact that the presiding officer, Dion van Rooyen, actually stated that when the case was underway that he was expecting that all the accused will be in court, but only one appeared in court. That was David Dube, so the others didn't come through. And he did mention that he communicated with the legal representatives of the accused to say that the judgment won't be ready, because what happened is that they had applied for Section 174 for acquittal, because of what you have mentioned, that they believe that the state's case is weak. So then there was that confusion maybe from the lawyers to say that since this case is being postponed, they shouldn't be present in court. So what the presiding officer said is that a warrant of arrest is authorized, but in abeyance until the 2nd of May, which is okay. the next court appearance. So for now, it's not like they are wanted by the police. But if they don't come to court on the 2nd of May, then they might start to have problems with the police then.
So really no judgment today then, if this matter's been postponed, right?
No judgment, because the magistrate said he's not ready with the judgment, which was expected to be delivered today. So by the 2nd of May, we're hoping that he will be ready and will know whether these accused are being acquitted or not.
And then just a reminder, so as part of an application 174, basically the state's case is closed and the defense says, we don't think you've proven the case against us. What are the accused saying here? What are they saying in terms of the kind of evidence that's been led?
Remember, already there are some charges of corruption that have been withdrawn, in as far as the former Minister of State Security, Bongani Mpongo, is concerned. And his brother as well was one of those people who were accused of this alleged criminal activity, and all charges against him were withdrawn. So from the side of the accused, they believe that there's a lot of gaps. The fact that they are counts that have been withdrawn, in as far as some of the accused are concerned, it shows that the case of the state is not that strong. That is why then they believe that they had to apply for their acquittal. And also, this is a case that started running in 2020, so they believe that justice is being delayed up until now. So they want this case to be over and done, considering the time that it has been running in court. Mandy.
Mweli, thank you very much for that. Mweli Masilela, Newsroom Africa reporter, speaking to us there about that case involving the former State Security Minister Bongani Mpongo and his co-accused. Sure, if he's successful with this 174 application, it's not going to be a good look for the NPA.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
You'll know that every week there is Politicking with Teddy Madia, the podcast in which Teddy speaks to various politicians in the run-up to the elections. This week, Teddy speaks to the ANC's head of elections, Mdumiseni Ntuli, who has reiterated that the party is not looking at entering into coalitions. Take a listen.
This week on Politicking with Teddy Madia.
How ready is the ANC to go to negotiation tables and speak coalitions? How ready are you for May the 29th to go to the table and talk power sharing?
Teddy, we strongly despise coalition as ANC. We are vehemently opposed to the idea of coalition. And that is not because of being arrogant or self-centered. Our lived experience as the ANC and the South Africans in general is that coalitions have not worked in our country.
I'm speaking to the head of elections at the governing party, that's the ANC, Mdumiseni Ntuli.
Listen to the full episode on PrimeMediaPlus.com. Politicking with Teddy Madia on EWN. In touch, in tune, and independent.
The Midday Report.
Lots of reaction to this issue of swimming on school camps. The argument that I've made is that we should just stop swimming, particularly at rivers, on school camps. The other argument, of course, is that we should just be teaching children how to swim. Gigi saying on the WhatsApp line, "Hi, Mandy, it might be worth mentioning that in some countries, especially in Europe, school swimming lessons form part of the primary school curriculum. Is this a viable option in South Africa with limited schools and infrastructure, pools at schools and infrastructure? Is this a viable option? What is the solution to this? Do we stop swimming taking place at schools?" And it'll be important to get more detail around this latest incident in which two children from Benoni died. So that's going to be one big story today. The other one, of course, is a reaction to this decision by the courts to strike former President Jacob Zuma's private prosecution of Billy Downer and Karen Moore from the role as well.